Welcome to the Vault Podcast, classic music reviews, presented by IV Creative. Now, here's your hosts, B. Cox and the crew.
Greetings and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Vault Podcast, classic music reviews, presented by IV Creative. It's a perspective of the classics from a fresh point of view. We appreciate you for taking your time and lending your ears to our perspective. You could be anywhere listening to anything, but you're right here with us, so we thank you. With you today is yours truly, B. Cox, and with me, I have my boy in the place to be, our host of the Raw Sex Podcast. You know him as Cousin Damo, a.k.a. Dominique Marks. Make sure y'all are following Raw Sex Podcast on Instagram, also on Twitter, and make sure y'all are listening to Raw Sex and subscribe as well. Every Friday, make sure you check out on Friday morning. We got a hot new episode. Of course, we are climbing up those charts and the numbers continue to go up. So make sure y'all going through, as we always say on his show, and we say it here, support is free. So make sure y'all go there, run the numbers up. Make sure you follow on Instagram and checking in on the post. And make sure y'all are going out there and sharing out there if y'all like enjoyed the content. You know, it's a new year. We started with a couple of episodes and ready to get things started back up. So make sure y'all go to Raw Sex. Listen and support that. We want to make sure that we thank all of our listeners and supporters out there, stateside and worldwide, for continuing to support the show. We're now 3 weeks into this season six, y'all. We want to thank y'all so much for all the feedback of the last two episodes that we did with Van Everett from the Scenario Radio Show, and now we're into the third one as we continue to go on, highlighting albums from the years 1994, 1999, and 2004. Just remember to make sure that y'all are going to vaultclassicpod.com. Once again, that's vaultclassicpod.com. Check out all our episodes, join our mailing list, and of course, make sure y'all go into the merchandise store to cop that hot new merch to support the podcast and support the show. Once again, that's vaultclassicpod.com. As we always like to say here on The Vault, our motto is hashtag open the vault, hashtag nothing but the classics and MBTC. And today, Damo, we're going to go back 25 years ago, and we're going to go to what many people believe is actually his debut, but is actually the second studio album from Eminem, the Slim Shady LP, released February 23rd, 1999, was recorded between 1997 and 1998. Majority of it, if not all of it, done at Studio B in Ferndale, Michigan, with a runtime of 59 minutes and 39 seconds on Aftermath and Interscope Records. The producers on this, Eminem himself, of course, Dr. Dre, Mark and Jeff Bass, and Melman, the singles from the Slim Shady LP. The first one, My Name Is, released January 25th, 1999. Role Model, released May 26th, 1999. And Guilty Conscious, released on June 8th of 1999. So, Damo, going back to Eminem, right around this debut, right around the time we're in high school, we're talking hip-hop every single day. We're right around this time period, we're getting ready to hit around the turn of the century. And this was something that, when this came out, really kind of caught a lot of us by surprise, based on the fact of the very so obvious reason why I caught it by surprise. But when you actually got in and listened to the content, it took you into a whole lot of different places. And the discussions around this, I would have to say, were based around so many different points when it came to Eminem. And I want to say that when you got through the album, the least of the talking points was the fact that he was white. You know, it was about everything else as a result of that. But going into it, though, I think we all knew that if Dr. Dre was going to sign on to work with a dude, that he had to be dope. And if he was signing on to work with a white boy, it had to be something extraordinary. So that's where we'll lay the foundation. And now we're going to go ahead and get into it.
First thoughts and reflections.
So we'll start with you, Damo, about the Slim Shady LP. Let us know what your thoughts was thinking about it, reminiscing and listening to it back then. And then now this past week, listening to it, what are your thoughts on it now, 25 years later?
I remember this album like kind of like it was yesterday. Obviously, like what you said, you know, the catching us by surprise and the hype being that Dr. Dre signed this white boy. But I remember my cousin grabbed the CD first. Mm-hmm. So he grabbed it. Man, he probably scratched it up playing it so much. I was like, we listen to this on again? But I know back then we used to listen to the album. You know, we had to know the lyrics. So we listened to it over and over. I'm like, you know, first of all, the shit was crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you listen to it back, he's like, this man, he really said that shit?
Yeah.
So you listen to it, but then you're not even listening to the rhyme patterns he popping off on it, and he going nuts. And when I'm back then, you're like, damn, he fucking spitting.
Yeah.
Now listening to it with mature ears, you listen to it. Of course, I still feel the same way, But I also like listened to it this week. I was like, he seemed like he might be the first person that went into that crazy voice thing that people be trying to, that some of the great rappers do now, where they do the little Nicki Minaj, Kendrick Lamar, The Game does it too, whatever, where they do the little change up in their voice, man. They sound funny or whatever, but they be spitting.
Yeah.
So I think he might have created that shit right then listening to it this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. I think he was one of the ones that helped popularize it as well. I mean, because he was the person that we talked about, Eminem and all his different alter egos, right? Like, this is Slim Shady. I mean, you're looking at Marshall Mathers, Eminem, and then there's Slim Shady, right? It was sort of like he was playing all the different characters in a set of a movie, sort of like Eddie Murphy. And he had to play each one of those separate characters distinctly and make sure that you were looking at a different person. And what it speaks to is not just his creativity, also say it speaks to his complexity and also to how difficult his life was. Because I think that having to go through all that shit he went through and also have to deal with all the shit that he dealt with, not just in the fact that he grew up poor and his mother and his father and his brother having died and the fact that he was white and people slept on him, he got picked on and, you know, he dealt with addiction issues, that he kind of sort of like developed these different personas to help him get through this different shit, right? So when you talk about the shit that like Kendrick Lamar does with his voice and Nicki being Roman and all this different shit, it all kind of goes back to Slim Shady, right? I mean, that's really what the fuck it goes back to. But man, the thought that I had is that I first heard about Eminem from the internet sites and the discussion boards. So this is 97. I just got the internet. And so I was a little bit late in a lot. But see, back then, I kind of just got the internet, but I felt like I had a late pass back then because I felt like everybody is starting getting the internet like in 95 when AOL first dropped and, you know, 96. And I felt like by the time we got it, we were kind of late. You know what I'm saying? Because like people were saying then, oh, go to our website. And I'm like, how the fuck can I go to a website? And I ain't got a computer that can get on the internet that I can go to a website. I had never even been on the internet until I got the internet in my house. So when I got the internet and jumped on online, the first thing I did was go and look at these different hip hop sites, discussion boards. So I was on DavyD.com. I was on Ducktown.com chat. I was on Support Online Hip Hop and 88HipHop.com, all these different places. And that's where the first time I really got introduced to underground hip hop for the first time. So when I heard about this in 97 is when I first heard about this white rapper from Detroit named Eminem, and everybody was going crazy about him. And this is right on the heels of the 97 Rap Olympics, where he blew up. That's where so many people ended up discovering him, where he made it all the way to the finals and then eventually lost in the finals of the Rap Olympics. Well, at that point, he gets back. His name is hot in the streets. He goes and records that Slim Shady EP. And during this time when all this stuff is going on, he's still going through stuff. His house gets broken into. Him and his girl Kim, of course, involved in a lot of different, you know, shit. And we knew about Kim a lot from this album and also from all the ones afterwards. Their love, hate, and then the hate and relationship again. And then,
man, I understand it now. Yeah, am I understanding?
I know you do. And his EP finds its way on the desk of Dr. Dre, right? When it got to Interscope CEO Jimmy Iovine's desk. And Dre just says, yo, wherever this kid is at, we need to find him. We need to sign him now. And a lot of people were like, well, Dre, don't sign this kid because he's white. But Dre was like, I don't give a fuck what color he is. He's dope as fuck. And we going to make some great music. He signs to Dr. Dre. And it was a big surprise to anybody out there. The buzz came around by the obvious fact. Yes, he was white, but he was also dope. Matter of fact, I would say iller than probably any white boy rapper that we had ever known before, right? And his subject matter, and his subject matter, though, was where we really got people going and got us talking. It was like the shock value. It was like being aghast at the shit he would say and how candid he would be about his struggles growing up, about addiction, about wanting to kill his girlfriend, about the things that you would just, he would just come out and break out of left field and be like, yo, like you said, like he also said on The Real Slim Shady, he didn't just say what I think he did he? Yes, he did. And so the thing is that we thought that he was off the chain and we thought that that was the most we could experience from in one artist after listening to this album. But for real, that was only the tip of the iceberg because as the albums went on, he would continue to unload that shit onto us and do it in a way that only he could. And like the thing to me, which I loved, is that beyond the fact that the production was dope and he learned from one of the best, the way that he used words, right? The way that he manipulated them into his flow was so uncanny. And eventually it became legendary. And not only did it become legendary, it eventually evolved as the years went on. And I think that the myth needs to sort of stop. And this sort of had like emerged within the last 5 years or so. And it's been perpetuated by so many people out there, like, you know, Lord Jamar and a couple of the folks out there saying like, yo, this dude is only nice because he's white. You know what I mean? And it's like, no, he's not just nice and successful. His success, you can say it helps the fact that he's white, right? But I think the fact is that he brought something to hip hop that nobody else brought. He just so happened to be white and also poor and have a story that if you didn't actually know it, you would think it was too outrageous to be true. And this album sort of personified Eminem in that respect. It gave you a story that was so outrageously crazy, that was so perfectly and meticulously given, almost like you were dealing with a poet, a playwright, a script writer, and a director all wrapped up into one. Like, he literally put on a show for us, right? Even before he came out with the Eminem show, this album was literally like a production to show you just how fucked up his life was and how hungry he was to make it in rap. And we were never the same until after that.
Yeah, also how fucked up his brain was.
Oh, bro. Yeah. Now, we talk about the differences between, like, Addicted M and Sober M and how people have said that now that Eminem is sober, he's not nearly as dope. But, I mean, he's still dope. He just has different shit to talk about now, right? But those struggles sort of gave a lot of people sort of a gateway into his mind and also connected it with us because he was letting us know that he was severely fucked up and didn't give a fuck up that he was severely fucked up, right? And I think a lot of people were like him in that respect, is that here's this dude that so many rappers tend to say, oh, they're so nice, they're so rich, they got this, and they'll talk about how they would struggle, but then they came up. He was letting us know, like, yo, like he said in that freestyle on 8 Mile, I'm a fucking piece of white trash and say it proudly. That's almost like what the fuck he was singing in this album as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what helped endear people to him, really. That really was what helped endear people to him.
It definitely did, because there was a lot of people going through the struggles that didn't admit to it.
Through the same shit.
He was just open with it on the album.
Absolutely. The fact that he was so open with it as well, that definitely helped too.
Highlights and lowlights.
So, Damo, your highlights and lowlights for the Slim Shady LP. What do you have for your highlights and any lowlights if you got them?
You know, what's funny is I haven't listened to this album in forever.
Okay.
Until you said, hey, you know what that is? I was like, ain't this one of them great albums right there? Why haven't I listened to it?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to listen to it, and I was like, I was shocked at how easy it went through.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, really, to me, the whole album is a highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Highlight lyrics, highlight production, everything. The way it was set up, track to track, it seemed like the way you said it, orchestrated it, they put it together the right way.
Yeah.
So it just bounced right into the next song, right into the next song, right? So I was like, okay, okay. The only, and I didn't really want to say it's a low light to me, because the lyrics on there, it was still top tier. I just didn't really like the song. I think that's Come On Everybody.
Yeah.
I think that's the only song to me that I'm like, I could have did without it.
Yeah.
But other than that, the highlight is the whole album to me.
Yeah. Yeah. The entire album. Right. Any in particular songs that stand out to you though? Like you listened to it and you was like, this is a cut above the rest, like maybe one or two songs that stand out to you?
Man, I love the My Fault.
Yeah.
Power the Shrew.
Yeah.
Like, I know your dad raped you. This song, you're crazy as hell.
Yeah, I know.
But the way he tell that story on there,
mm-hmm,
is tough.
Yeah.
Right. And then you know what? The skits are a serious highlight.
Oh yeah.
The skits are crazy as hell. Can they from Connecticut?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that was crazy to me that I didn't know until the day was that soap skit. I didn't know that Royce da 5'9" was on that soap skit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when I'm hearing that, I was like, that is Royce.
Yep. That's Royce. Yep. Yep. It is, man. It is. Man, well, what I would say is this. All the singles, obviously, the My Name Is, when that joint dropped and the fact that, you know, he had Dr. Dre in the video with him, and there was a video that was crazy as hell, too, but that sample, like, and the story behind that sample, when I actually heard about it, you know, him actually sampling that song and using that to be for My Name Is, and the fact that they said that they did it in only an hour. That's wild, man. It really is wild. The other part about it is the fact that using that Labby Sifferies track, I got the and the fact that the dude is gay, and he said that he refused to clear the sample until they took out the sexist and homophobic lyrics out of it. So, you know, that's a whole nother story that adds to the mythology of the album. Guilty Conscience is a great song with him and Dre. I mean, obviously, you could tell him he wrote both parts, him and Dre's parts. You know what I'm saying? You can tell in the writing of it and the way that Dre spits it. You know, Dre has a way of, when he spits a song, you can tell who wrote it for him, right? So, but it was a great way of being that sort of the angel over your shoulder and the devil over your shoulder and the different scenarios was really brilliantly done. The role models, crazy. Because, you know, he was spitting some shit on that one, too. And and it's different things with the lines and then the hooks. And he was talking about some, don't you want to be just like me? Like, no. Yeah. And then, like, the first Eminem song that I actually heard was just Don't Give a Fuck. And, I mean, that was incredible. Absolutely incredible. But then getting into some of the deeper album tracks, you see him really get vulnerable on tracks like Brain Damage. And also on As the World Turns and on Rock Bottom, which to me, Rock Bottom is probably one of my two or three favorite tracks on there. And especially with Rock Bottom, because, you know, like, people go through shit like that every day now, right? And so even when he was recording this EP, before he got with Dr. Dre, this is the type of shit that he was going through. These are the type of songs that sort of endear him to people, like knowing and seeing him at his absolute worst. But then when you get into the creativity, we talked about Guilty Conscience and then 97 Bonnie and Clyde with them talking about basically putting Kim in his trunk with Haley in their car seat with them while he went to go dump her in the ocean. Like, I mean, really depraved shit, right? When you think about it at his core, but it's just like, damn, man, just think about that. He's taking his infant daughter with him to go dump her mother after he done slit her throat and him explaining to her what happened, right? Oh, she was eating and she spilled ketchup all over her shirt. Don't worry about that little thing on her neck. Like, wow, dog, for real? Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. But the skits, as you mentioned, are definitely a highlight too. And I kind of feel like that became a hallmark of his during that first three album run. The skits sort of helped to break the album up and to give you a little bit of connection from one part of the album to the next. Like, it doesn't make the album monotonous. You always get some humor in between those tracks. And the skits are funny as hell because he's really drawing the humor out of this off of his shit in his mind. Like, the Ken Kniff shit, dog, like, and then for him to take that and draw it across three albums, it's like, dog, like, what the fuck are you thinking about when you write these skits? Like, for real? That's why it makes Eminem Eminem. So, and then the soap skit, I mean, like, come on, dog. Yeah, that just, bro, like, bro, there's something wrong with you. Probably my favorite song on the album is probably Bad Meets Evil, right? And this sort of connects us to what we would see 12 years after this album came out when Royce and M eventually released their Bad Meets Evil collaboration album, which for me, I still like to say when it comes in the 2000s, is probably within my top 10s of dopest lyrical displays that you can see from an album in the 2000s on. I mean, like, they went in on it. You saw a preview of that on this. And for those who don't know, the whole relationship between M and also between Royce, they were cool at first. Then they had a little bit of a beef between him and D12. And D12 and M were not messing with Royce after a little while. And then at some point in time, after Proof died, becoming cool with each other again, and they eventually mended fences and they ended up putting the Bad versus Evil together. M was also a very, I would say, instrumental source in getting towards the Slaughterhouse getting together, which is Royce, Crooked Eye, Joe Budden, and Joel Ortiz. Of course, that didn't end the way that we thought it would end, but, you know, it was a good idea. And you had four really dope MCs put together as a result of that. And then to end the album with I Still Don't Give a Fuck. Just letting you know, right? And it sets up everything perfectly for this run that Eminem's going to go on over the next 4 years, where eventually he's the biggest, not only hip-hop star, but probably one of the best five biggest stars in all of music at that time, by the time the Eminem show drops in 2002. So, really great things. I have to agree with you. If there is a low light, it would have to be Come On Everybody. Not, like you said, the lyrics on there are still top tier, but it kind of didn't fit with everything else to me, right? But other than that, our production on this, Dr. Dre doing his thing on the tracks he produced, the Bass Brothers on here, Mark and Jeff did an absolutely phenomenal job, L-Man on the tracks that he produced, just for a debut album, about as well as a album that you can produce for somebody that has a style that's unorthodox, And also with the subject matter he was talking about, how do you make beats with things that he's this like him talking about addiction and killing his mother and his, you know, like, but it fit. Everything kind of all fit together. It really was. Well, the thing that also helped, though, is that Dr. Dre said M was a junkie in the studio. He was somebody that got in and worked. And for the way that Dr. Dre was, it was a marriage made in heaven because they were both of the same mindset. They wanted to get in the studio and work. And he was willing to stay in the studio for 12, 16, 24 hours straight just to be able to get something done. So when you have two people who visions align on an album, that's when you really get something like magic starting to happen.
Yeah, you can tell they're imagining in heaven. I wish they would do whatever the album together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see if Dre's interested in making beats anymore because it seems like he's, you know, kind of he's just like to be executive and play back and chill. And, you know, M, I don't know. I don't know if I've heard much of anything from M over the last few years that if I would want to hear another album, you know,
that is true.
You know, so
that is true.
I mean, but he's done a lot. He's done so much in his career. He doesn't know, like, does he need to put out another album? I don't know if he does.
No,
so,
he really don't need to.
He doesn't. So
but you would like to see the exercise to see if it. Mm-hmm. If he can give you one, I would like to see if he could give you one more classic.
One more classic.
I would like to see that.
Yeah.
And I think the only way you can really get another classic from him would be with Dre.
Yeah, I agree. And I know that he can produce himself as well, but I would love to see him and Dre lock in the studio and stay in there for a month and just see what they can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Notable quotables.
So we'll go to notable quotables. What notable quotable or quotables do you have from this, Damo?
97 Bonnie and Clyde.
I figured you might like something from that.
Verse 2. There's a place called heaven and a place called hell. A place called prison and a place called jail. And that is probably on its way to all of us at once. Kamama's got a new husband and a stepson. And you don't want a brother, do you? Maybe when you're old enough to understand a little better, I'll explain it to you. But for now, we'll just say mama was real, real bad, was being mean to dad, and made him real, real mad. But I still feel sad that I put her on time out. Sit back in your chair, honey. Quit trying to climb out. I told you it's okay, Hahe. Wanna baba? Take a night-night? Nana? Boo-boo gaga? Here, make a poo-poo caca. Daddy change your daddy. Clean the baby up so her can go 90-90. Your dad will wake you up as soon as we get to the water. 97 Bonnie and Clyde, me and my daughter. Like, listen, when I say, yo, how he go from he being a menace to talking to his daughter?
Yep.
Baby.
Baby talk. Okay. Yeah, and everything. Exactly. Crazy, man. Yeah.
Oh, don't worry about mama.
Yeah.
Hey, yo, this is
bad
for him.
Off the
crazy
hook.
As hell.
Off the hook. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, man. He's that whole song, 97 Bonnie and Clyde, is like, damn, dog, you had to be in a sick place to write some shit like this, dog. Like, and I wonder now that his daughter is now grown, like, what the fuck she thinks about this shit.
I was thinking the same thing when I was listening to this song. I say, yo.
Yeah.
I mean, you her being there, she probably know that that's, you know, how I was. So she's like, yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Like, yo, she,
Yeah, I think she kind of chalks it up for what it is, because I think she knows, one, how what kind of place her father was in, and also the relationship her mother and father also had. And that this was a part of him using his creative agency to sort of, I guess, express what his emotions were during that time. Even if he wasn't literally going to kill her, he needed to, I guess, express that to the world, which is, you know, it's still wild, though. Still wild as fuck to do some shit like that, though. It really is. But I got a couple of quotables. My first one is the first verse from Rock Bottom. And it just speaks to, like, again, what it is that he and other people go through with these struggles. He says, I feel like I'm walking a tightrope without a circus net. Popping Percocet, I'm a nervous wreck. I deserve respect, but I work and sweat for this worthless check. I'm about to burst this tech to somebody to reverse this debt. Minimum wage got my adrenaline cage full of venom and rage, especially when I'm engaged. And my daughter's down to her last diaper. It's got my ass hyper. I pray to God answers. Maybe I'll ask Nikeser. Watching ballers while they flossing in the pathfinders. These overnight stars become autograph signers. We all long to blow up and leave the past behind us, along with the small fries and average half-pinders. But player haters turn and bitch like they have vaginas, because we see them dollar signs and let the cash blind us. Money will brainwash you and leave your ass mindless. A snake slither in the grass, spineless. I mean, it's It's crazy, you know, and him talking about that. I know a lot of people can relate to that, saying that he's, you know, he works and sweat for this worthless check. You know, the whole thing is they said minimum wage got his adrenaline cage full of venom and rage, especially when I'm engaged. And my daughter's down to her last diaper. It got my ass hyper. I pray that God answers. Maybe I'll ask nicer. That shit hit your boy right in the heart just there, because shit. Yeah. I know what the hell it is to go through some shit like that, man. And my second one comes from the second verse of Just Don't Give a Fuck. And he starts off talking about these other white rappers and another talk to, and then goes into his crazy mode again. I'm nicer than Pete, but I'm on a search to crush a milk bone. I'm everlasting. I melt vanilla ice like silicone. I'm ill enough to just straight up diss you for no reason. I'm cold in the snow season when it's Tony below freezing. Flavor with no season. This is the sneak preview. I'll diss your magazine and still won't get a weak review. I'll make your freak leave you. It smells like Folgers crystals. This is a lyrical combat. Gentlemen, hold your pistols. But I form like Voltron and blast my shoulder missiles. Slim Shady. Eminem was the old initials. Extorting, snorting, exporting abortion. Pathological liar. Blowing shit out of proportion. The looniest, zaniest, spontaneous, sporadic. Impulsive thinker, compulsive drinker, and addict. Half animal, half man. Dumping your body inside of a fucking trash can with more holes than an Afghan. I mean, it's crazy, man. The fact that he took those first two bars to talk about all these white rappers. Say, I'm nicer than Pete. But I'm on a search to crush a milk bone. I'm everlasting. I'm out with vanilla ice like a silicone. He dissed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 white rappers in 2 bars. Yeah. Oh, man. And I think he had to kind of do that to kind of set himself aside from other white rappers, yes, you know?
Mm-hmm. To let you know that he ain't deaf.
Yeah, he ain't going to have to let folks know. And people, it's unfortunate that Pete, MC Search, Milkbone, Everlast, and Vanilla Ice had to catch some strays on this joint, but that's what he had to do, though, you know? That's what he had to do. I love this joint. I mean, he really kind of, to me, like I said, this is the first Eminem song that I heard, and I was just like, oh, man, this white boy is serious, dog. I got to make sure I cop this shit when it comes out, you know what I'm saying? So lots of other quotables on this joint. You could probably do an episode just for the quotables on this song, on this album alone, for real, dog. You could. Yeah. You could.
Final verdict.
So we're at to the final verdict, Damo. What to you is the Slim Shady LP? Is it a classic, essential album, dope? Is it good, just okay, or something else other than that?
It's a classic, all-time classic. For its time in there, when you go back, you know, now the lyrics is not prevalent no more. You know, it's like, hey, you missed this time with sitting with sitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the production is great. Great production, great lyrics.
Now, it's a classic to me as well. You look at all the elements of what you look for in a classic album, the impact, the legacy, what it has on people. I mean, you got to think that when M came out with this, he definitely helped to shape with this album and the other two that followed afterwards, a lot of lyricists that took after him, that people started coming afterwards and wanted to see if they could match up with that sort of mastery. And then also, he kind of made it okay. Like, people talk about emo rap, like, and we talk about how rap now is emo, and these kids, they're on, like, you know, it's like pill popping rap and depression and stuff like that. Like, that this shit was emo rap and pill popping rap before that shit even existed in this portion of the 21st century.
I ain't gonna say it was emo, but I'm gonna say he was spitting the stuff that they be doing in the emo.
Yes. That it was spitting, you know, without a doubt.
He was spitting it without the emo that we get. Like, it was straight rap lyrics.
Yes, it was. It definitely was. But that shit,
Now you can say he's a now that we talking about it, he's got like the father of a lot of these niggas that we didn't give him. We give Joe Button being a lot of these niggas fathers, but really, it's probably Eminem that's their father.
Yeah.
Just Joe gave it more sentimental music, more art, like an R&B slower type of music to give you that feeling of it being, he brought the emo with the rap, Joe did, right?
Yeah.
But the lyrics-wise, it was Eminem. And letting you know it's okay to have these mental issues, to have these issues with the pills and the drugs and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, man. And so as a result of that, he helped to create a lane for something that not many other people could follow, but many other people would try to imitate later on. And what he did is, as a result of that, is sort of create a level of excellence and standard that many people will attribute to him being white, But I say it helps if the music is also dope as well. The production is outstanding and you can spit like the way that he does. And, you know, hey, could you say if he was black, it wouldn't be the same? I mean, sure, you could possibly say that success-wise, but the music wasn't dope because he was white. It was because he's dope as fuck. That's it. And that's the only thing to it. That's it. Slim Shady LP. It's a classic. Me and Damo both agree on that, man. What do y'all have to say about it? Hit us up on social media. Of course, go to vaultclassicpod.com to get to all of our social media channels. What do you remember about the Slim Shady LP around that time if you were around and outside? What were your thoughts about it? Were you as shocked about it as we were? And of course, what are some of your favorite songs? Hit us up on social media. Let's talk and keep the conversation going. And that is going to wrap up yet another edition of The Vault. Please make sure you are visiting us at vaultclassicpod.com. That's vaultclassicpod.com. There you can learn more about the show, check out our past episodes, join our mailing list, leave a review, or if so inclined, you can leave us a voice note. Click the blue microphone in the bottom right-hand corner to leave us a voice note to let us know what you think about the show or to just show us some love. To support the show, click the coffee cup shaded in yellow in the bottom left-hand corner to access our Buy Me a Coffee page. On Buy Me a Coffee, you can give a small monetary donation to support the show to ensure that we can keep the vault open for many years to come. You can also visit us on social media at Vault Classic Pod on IG, Twitter, and on TikTok. Also hit us on YouTube and our Facebook page. Like and follow us on social media. Subscribe to the pod and the YouTube channel. We do it here all for you. We appreciate the support. And if you have a friend, tell a friend and make sure that that friend tells a friend. Always remember to keep your headphones on and your music loud, but not too loud. And as we close, we'd like to remind everyone to dream big because dreams are the basis for creation. Always create, motivate, and elevate. Because you were never destined or created to stay stationary or ordinary in this life. And on that note, we say peace.
Thank you for listening and coming into The Vault. Please subscribe and visit us at vaultclassicpod.com. That's vaultclassicpod.com.